it wouldn't have taken off. But instead, we kept at it. We kept, you know, we kind of pivoted the customer we were targeted. We like, we figured out ways to make it work so that eventually it happened that Apple introduced the stylus. We didn't know anything about it. We were just like, oh my God, this is amazing. They introduced it, but we were ready because we had never given up. We had kept at it. We had kept at it. And we were in the perfect position then to capitalize
on
new hardware that Apple had just introduced.
Hello and welcome to Pillars of Wealth Creation, where we talk about creating financial success with a special focus on business and real estate. I'm your host, Todd Dexheimer. Now, let's get to it.
Are you ready to start investing in real estate today but don't know where to start? Sometimes investing can seem way too complicated, but it actually couldn't be any easier than with HomeInvest.com. You know the co-founder and my friend, Nate Armstrong. He appeared on episode 20, and if you haven't heard it, go back and listen to it, episode number 20. Home Invest is a company that allows you to invest in turnkey real estate. Their goal is to build powerful investment tools that make real estate investing accessible to everyone. They have contractors and property managers available for you with the click of your mouse. While other real estate agents can only offer a property, Home Invest brings you a full turnkey package that allows you to diversify your investments, earn passive income, and start building equity in properties. Their simple, intuitive design allows newcomers and experienced investors alike to hit the ground running and to be able to choose the properties when they want and where they want. View easy-to-understand charts and data to allow you to buy in only a few clicks or just a simple phone call. With Home Invest, you'll be building your portfolio as quickly or as slowly as you would like. And right now, Home Invest is giving our listeners, Pillar of Wealth Creation listeners, a free course on how to finally win in real estate investing. So go to homeinvest.com/pillars. That's homeinvest.com/pillars. To claim your free course today. Hello and welcome to Pillars of Wealth Creation. I'm your host, Todd Dexheimer, and with me today is Matt Ronge. Matt, how are you doing today?
Good, good. Great to be here.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate you coming on the show, and I wanted you on because I heard you speaking at a crowdfunding, whatever you want to call it, get together.
Yeah, symposium, I think.
Symposium, there you go. That was the fancy word. And you did what I think is extremely impressive. You raised $650,000 through Kickstarter.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not providing, you can tell the whole story, but you're mm-hmm. not providing basically returns on investment. Like a typical crowd fund. So anyways, Matt, you're the co-founder and CEO of Astro HQ, and you guys are the makers of AstroPad and Luna Display. And a little bit about Matt, he's an experienced engineer and entrepreneur who has been building high tech consumer products on Apple platforms since 2005. And prior to founding Astro HQ, you worked as a software engineer for Apple and for Garmin. So Matt, with that, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit more about you, your background, and kind of what Astro HQ is all about?
Sure. So I can start with Astro. So yeah, we're Astro HQ, and we started with our first product, like you mentioned, AstroPad. And AstroPad is a way to turn the iPad into a high-end drawing tablet for the computer, for like the Mac.
Okay.
So this replaces the need for really expensive specialty equipment that artists and designers used to have to buy. So, you know, equipment costing, it costs as much as $3,000, $3,000, depending on which particular model you're getting from a company called Wacom. Depending on how you pronounce it. And we set out when we founded Astro, we wanted to provide that same experience, but be able to do it with an iPad. So use like the devices that an artist or designer probably already has, like a Mac and an iPad. And so that was our first product, AstroPad. It took us, you know, a year and a half of research and development to build. And that's also a key thing here, too, is both my co-founder and I, we met years ago. It was about, I think about 12, 13 years ago now, while we were working at Apple together. We were actually interns at that time at Apple. And so we had a lot of experience in the space. We were really familiar with working on Apple platforms, software development. So we had the skills ourselves to kind of bootstrap and build the product. And it still, despite that, took a long time. It took a year and a half. It was to get to our version one. It was way more difficult, actually, than we anticipated. And but then we were able to get AstroPad out there, and it really took off. You know, it turned out that there was a space in the market for this. People were really interested in this. It had been something that artists and designers had been wanting, but nobody had really cracked it yet and figured out how to do it and provide a good experience. And we were able to do that with AstroPad. And so it was just the two of us, me and my co-founder Giovanni, and started growing the business from there. Along with that, we're also bootstrapped. We've actually never raised outside money, investment of any kind, sold any piece of the company. We're totally bootstrapped. And so we did that with AstroPad, and we grew that. And as we were working on AstroPad, we growing it and expanding it, getting it to more and more users, growing our team, we ran into a new problem and related to AstroPad. And that's that AstroPad by itself mirrors your computer screen. So you end up with, especially when you have a large iPad, you end up with these two of the exact same screen, like right next to each other. One you can draw on, one you can look at. Mirrored. And people were asking us the obvious question, like, well, can't I use it as like an extra screen? Like, I'd love to be able to put, you know, reference material, say a photograph that you're drawing from on the one screen, and then I'm going to, you know, take the iPad in my hand and I'm going to draw on it. And we're like, yeah, that's a totally great idea. So we started looking into that, and once again, much like AstroPad, turned out to be a lot harder than we anticipated. In fact, we found we couldn't do it through software. We actually had to build a hardware device that you plug into your Mac, that we now call Luna, to make this happen. And so once again, another bootstrap operation. We took profits from AstroPad, our first product, and we funneled that into research and development on Luna, and we worked with some folks doing hardware design and development, and then developed Luna Display. Once we got it far enough along, and we knew we could make it work, like technically as a product, then the question was there a spot in the market for this? Much like the same question we had with AstroPad, and so that's when we went to Kickstarter. And it was perfect because we had this hardware device, and so we could put it out there, kind of get an idea how many people are interested before we ever went to a factory and actually had to build a ton of them. So Kickstarter was beautiful for that. And then once again, like you mentioned, it's not an offering where we're giving up shares in the company either. It's essentially like a product pre-order. I mean, people are putting down money saying, you know, in order to make this happen, you know, I'm real willing to put down money here now, even though I might not get it for a year or even more. And but I want to see this product happen. And so that's how we were able to raise the $650,000, and then another, I think it's probably 110, 115 in additional pre-orders after that. And that's kind of where we are today, post Kickstarter and our two products.
So is this this new product, you said it was Luna. What did you call it? Luna Display. Okay. Yeah, Luna. So is Luna Display right now being sold, or is it still in development stage?
We're still so we're through the development, and With Lunar Display, we are now working on manufacturing, and we're working on fulfilling to our Kickstarter backers.
Okay.
We're working on fulfilling the first initial 100 right now. Sure. As we're, you know, scaling up the operation, we're going from essentially zero to we need to fill close to 8,000, I believe. Wow. And so that's not, we don't want to go from zero to 8,000. So we're starting to, you know, ramp that up. And actually this week we're going to be sending out 50 units to some of our first backers as we start to get that out there.
Well, that's got to be exciting.
Yeah, it's been over 2 years at this point now since the project started. Much like Astropad too. Astropad was almost 2 years as well for us to get going. And then the next big milestone for us is once we get past fulfilling to all our Kickstarter backers, is then having it for like mass market, general availability, anybody can buy it. And what's really cool about this product too for us is because it works as a second display, you know, it'll allow the iPad to work as a second display. It's useful for not just artists and designers, but it's really useful for anybody that's on the go and has a Mac and an iPad, and they need some extra screen real estate. I mean, I've used it when traveling for work too, and I've even used it on planes, hotels, where it's just like, hey, I'm working on some stuff, and I wanna pop up another screen here. I can use Lunar Display to do that and get two screens, much like I'd have set up in my regular office.
Cool. Really cool. So I got a couple questions for you that, you know, you were talking about at this time frame, right? You come up with this idea, this AstroPad first, and then Luna Display second. AstroPad took you a year and a half to develop. Mm-hmm. That was your very first one. So that, my question is more geared against, but even with this Luna Display over 2 years, how did you stay in it and keep going? And, you know, how did, where was that motivation that I know we can do it? Like, explain that thought process.
Yeah. So, going back to AstroPad, part of it was, I would say with AstroPad, ignorance is bliss with a lot of it. Like, we just didn't know in the beginning. Had we known, like, I hate to say it, but had we known in the beginning, we might have been like, wow, that's a big project. Like, I don't know. I don't know if we can do that, but instead I like to compare it to like, it was more like traversing a mountain range. It was like, you see a peak and we're like, we can do that. We can get up there. Let's do it. Let's get up to that peak. And we get up there and we'd be like, oh man, there's an even taller peak right there in the distance. We gotta get up to. And we just kept doing that, you know? And sure. It was like, we were motivated by the challenges too. I mean, that's where both my co-founder and I were driven by the challenge of entrepreneurship, like building something totally new. It's very challenging, and that's a lot of the fun for us. But also it's, we'd look at it, we'd be like, we're this far in, we're not giving up now. There's just no way, you know, we're going to see this through the end, you know, we're going to make it work. And what, just like give up all this work we've done so far. So it was just kind of that spirit that drove us through. The other thing, come to think of it, that also was really beneficial along the way is, you know, there were always, with anything, there's like highs and lows. And we'd have milestones along the way where there'd be like a breakthrough. We'd be like, wow. Some part of it's working. Like, one of the really unique things about AstroPad is that it works really well over Wi-Fi. And this is especially unique because even those expensive hardware devices I mentioned that it replaces, like the Wacom displays, those are hardwired. Those are big, bulky displays that are hardwired under desks. So even if you shell out $3,000, you're not going to get Wi-Fi support. It just doesn't exist outside of AstroPad. So, like, when we got some of that stuff working, it was incredibly exciting for us. We weren't done, but we had a milestone we hit.
You know? Saw the progress.
We saw the progress, and that gave us the energy to like get to that next peak.
Sure, sure. Were you guys working full-time jobs at that time, or did you give up full-time jobs?
No, we well, so we were actually, well, sort of. So we were doing consulting at the time. We were doing app consulting for different businesses, helping them build out their apps.
Yeah.
And in the beginning, it transitioned from like a side project we were doing after hours. And then during that year and a half, it kind of transitioned from like more of a side project to more of our full-time gig. And then we actually reduced the number of clients we had after we showed an early prototype of AstroPad to a Pixar animator we knew. We actually went to Pixar, we showed it to him, and he was super impressed. And we were like, okay, we know to finish this that we're going to have to like cut back on the number of clients we have. And so that I believe at that point we were about 50-50. And we had about 6 months to go, but I would say about 50% working on AstroPad and 50% working on our client work.
Yep.
And kind of ramped that all the way. And then when we released it, we kind of had to take a jump and be like, we're going to do this. And we stopped working with our clients and we're like, we're going to jump in head first. We don't know if this is going to work. But if it isn't, you know, I think we'll be able to find new clients or our clients will take us back or, you know, that we need to really give this a go. We're going to have to jump in head first here at this point.
Yeah, that's awesome. That takes a lot of courage to make that jump. Can you take us through some of those emotions before?
Oh yeah, it was very, so before we fully committed to it, we did release it and we saw like tremendous web traffic when we released it. Like we really tapped into something. And so we knew there was interest, you know, and so that was kind of the backbone of giving us the courage to jump and do it was that like, wow, there's a lot of people that are really interested in it. We were selling it from the beginning, but sales were not great in the beginning. We were really, that was I would say highest traffic day ever in the history of the company was those first like 2 days in terms of web traffic. Ever. In terms of sales though, it's like a non-event, you know.
Yeah.
It just didn't do that great. So while we knew there was a lot of interest, there was some sales to back it up, but not a ton. So that was kind of the worrying part. But we both thought that we really needed to give this a go. Like if we were gonna to give it a decent shot, we were going to have to make the jump. Otherwise we were going to have regrets. It was really like, well, what if we had done this? What if we had done, it was like, no, we're going to have to, you know, and let's just take it a month at a time, right? Let's just take it. And you know, we paid ourselves a very small salary, jumped into it, and worked on growing it. And that, this was in February, and that spring for us was actually a pretty tough spring for us because we had like the spike from the initial excitement around the launch that then died down and sales continued to plummet. So that was pretty nerve-wracking for us. It lit a fire under us and we started to experiment. And through those experiments, we were able to start to turn things around. And by having ourselves fully on the line there, that's also what, like, I'm not sure if it had been a side thing at that point, if we would have pursued it as aggressively. We might have been like, oh, we're happy with what's there versus when it's our main source of income. And we're like, okay, we got to do everything we can to try to make this work.
Yeah. Yeah. I know that. And that rings very true. When you've got other income coming in and that can just be a side deal.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's not a big deal if the sales come in.
Exactly.
It's
yeah.
Nice. It's nice when they do, but you don't have to commit as much to it.
Yep.
And it can just kind of be the second back burner thing. So when you did this, this Luna display, you had some clients already that you know, used AstroPad, likely were excited about your new product that's coming out. And so that likely helped with the Kickstarter. But take us through the Kickstarter. Maybe some details of how you got so many people interested. Got $650,000 that you raised, plus another, you said 100 and...
Yeah, about 110, I think.
110, okay.
Yeah, somewhere around there. Another 100,000, make it a nice 750,000.
So you raised 700, or not raised, but what, you know, got committed at $750,000.
Yeah, committed,
With no product. So that takes a couple things. That takes trust from the people who are committing this money, and then it's no product. So it's not like they've got something tangible. They can, okay, here it is. You're not going into Walmart and buying something. They're just trusting that this is going to happen, and that's a great thing. So take us through what was your strategy. You know, how did you market that, and what did you do?
Yeah, there was a couple things. So on the trust side, we had built some prototypes that we had that showed that it would work. And we had filmed our video with those prototypes showing that it would work. So that was part of it too, is like having it in the video, showing it in action. But then of course, you know, some skeptical people would say, well, you faked it. The video doesn't actually work. So anticipating that, we produced and sent a bunch of prototypes to journalists. Not a ton of them, but I think probably under 10, just to like select, like TechCrunch, for example, is one of them that we got. We were able to get a hold of. We were able to give them a unit. We got them to play with a unit, and they wrote an article about it. So it was great for generating coverage about us.
Yeah.
And it was also great for those Kickstarter backers that were kind of like, I don't know, like we could put the quote right there. That you could tell that somebody from TechCrunch, like somebody external, a third party, had used this and said, you know what, this has a lot of potential. This is really cool. So that went a long ways, I think. And it's not just, you know, not just believe me, but look at, we've actually lent these out to somebody else and they played with it and they're like, yeah, this is the real deal. So that helped a lot. And that was one of the major ways we generated buzz about it. And so we reached out to many, many different journalists. I mean, for the vast majority of them, we struck out. They weren't interested. But of those, you know, we were able to get a handful that, I don't know, maybe 6, 7 that actually took the unit and wrote about it. But that was enough. That was enough to get that traction going. And then through that, you know, Kickstarter sees that. We were also in touch with Kickstarter as well, but they see that. And then they're like, oh, this is really interesting. This is also on our platform. And then they featured us. They featured us as, I think it was like Tech Project of the Day. And so that helped build that momentum. Another thing that worked really, really well and was absolutely, absolutely key to our success was making a targeted message for those existing AstroPad customers we had. And it was a different message than we had pitched everybody else on the Kickstarter. Because we knew we were talking to a different customer that had different needs than just the general person on Kickstarter. And so we even made a video. There's actually a video out there of me talking, explaining it to our AstroPad customers and like why they should be interested, why we were going to Kickstarter and how this was going to add to their AstroPad experience, and sent that to our mailing list. And that's what allowed us to get to our goal really, really quickly. Within the first, I don't have the numbers handy right here, but we really, really, really quickly shot past our goal. And I think, I think 200,000 within the first 48 hours, wow, something like that. And most of that was driven off of our customer mailing list and having that really, really targeted video with a custom web page specifically for them. So I think to our existing customers, like it was very clear to them that we had really thought about them. We thought about how this would fit in. We thought about how it'd be useful. You know, we had really gone out of our way for them. And, you know, I think they understood it. They saw it, they appreciated it, and they backed us.
Well, part of that lesson to me would be listen to your customers, because you had said that that's kind of what some people had asked you, like, hey,
absolutely,
can you do this? And you said, sure, let's figure it out.
Yep. Yeah. And it just, the more we pursued that, the more we were like, oh, if we build this hardware, this will solve like these three problems that are major Astropad customer complaints. Okay, let's keep digging in here. And so that wasn't a big part of our pitch on Kickstarter. Our pitch on Kickstarter was more about what I was saying earlier. We're like, hey, now you can get a great second display for when you're traveling, when you're in the go, coffee shop, you know. But that wasn't our pitch for Astropad customers. It was more about, hey, there's these really specific issues you're having with Astropad. This is how the hardware fits in and solves your problems. And so, yeah, as you're saying, listening to our customers.
Right, which makes sense, because those customers are the only ones that know those problems.
Absolutely, those problems. Right.
Mm-hmm. Second people, they don't even know.
Yeah, they won't understand. Yeah.
So you've got to speak to it. And that's a good point as well, is that you have to know who your buyers are, who your customers are, because you're speaking to, you're doing two different marketing strategies.
Yep.
This one here, you're doing this one here. And if you just did the same one and sent it out as a mass marketing, you'd have had probably totally different results than what you
absolutely did. Totally different results, because also our Astropad customers too, that they were existing customers, so they also had more trust in us.
They had a lot of trust.
Yeah. And so they're also more willing to back us because they've been using the software, they, you know, maybe interacted with our customer support. They knew we were there for them. And so they helped us rocket out of the gate.
Yep.
And also by helping us rocket out of the gate, that's also when it started that snowball effect with, you know, other people seeing, okay, here's this featured Kickstarter that's raised an astonishing amount of money in a short amount of time, you know, thanks to our Astropad customers. But then other people see that and they see the different marketing messages and they're like, wow, I need to get in on this.
Yeah.
It was like those multiple pieces working together, as you're saying.
Well, and that's so true. They see that trust. They see that other people are already buying. So
absolutely, yeah.
It's going to be very helpful, you know, whether it's friends, family, or current customers, to get those first people to buy in.
Yeah, yeah.
Any other lessons that you learned from Kickstarter, or mistakes that you learned through that whole process?
Let's see. So the one thing we tried to do, I guess I wouldn't say it's a mistake, but it's something. Two things we tried that I wouldn't do again. One is we tried to do like social media influencer marketing, where we would be, you know, hey, we'll pay for a promoted post, or we'll, you know, to get out there to try to get our Kickstarter out in front of these people's followers. That and these were people that we thought their followers would be particularly interested in what we were doing. It didn't really work. People were in general pretty turned off by it. I think we only had very few people agree to do it. And so it just didn't work. And we spent a lot of time on it, and it didn't work.
Okay.
The other thing, too, is we tried to do some referral marketing where we'd get blogs, more like niche blogs, different blogs where we thought that for whatever reason their audience would be interested in a product like Lunar Display. And we would approach with like a referral, hey, you'll get a certain percentage of everybody you send to Kickstarter. And that also didn't work really well for us. You know, your results may vary, of course, by the community you're working with, you know, knowing the community you're selling to.
Yeah.
In our case, it was a lot of early tech adopters. I think for them, they just didn't like it. It rubbed them the wrong way. And in fact, we had more success with getting people to share it with their audiences just because they thought it was really cool than they did for like a referral monetary reward. Yeah, that was another thing. We thought that maybe it would work really well. Maybe we'd get a couple blogs that would really convert a lot of people. But I think, to be honest, I think in total we paid out $7 in referral money. So it just didn't. Once again, another thing that we spent a bunch of time on, thinking like maybe it could be a major leg of our marketing, and it just didn't go anywhere for us.
Yeah, and I agree. I wouldn't call that a mistake. I would just call that a trial and error. I mean, you've got to try. You've got to try different things when you're, especially you're trying to. You guys are trying to do this and get pre-sales and
absolutely.
You got to try different opportunities. And actually, good thing it didn't cost you much money, because hey, you didn't need it. You raised all the money, and why pay a bunch of money if you don't need to?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so given a future Kickstarter in that space, you know, I wouldn't do it, but maybe for other things it would work. But yeah, we had to try it to see, because we didn't know what was going to work.
Well, before the call, you said, you know, you guys are now you have a lot more people on your team and working with you. So give us some advice about operating a business successfully and dealing with the team.
Yeah. So one of the things I've learned is and actually I wrote something about this recently, to really focus on your strengths and really hire and delegate for things that you're weaker at. Because for example, like I'm not particularly great at necessarily catching details. So let's just use like proofreading an article, right? Like if I'm going to proofread something, I'm probably not the guy to do it. I'm probably going to miss, I'm going to look more at like the argument overall. I'm going to look more at like the bigger picture, and I'm probably going to miss some of the details. So it's great to have other people on the team that do have those skills, that are really detail oriented, and they'll go in and they'll find those mistakes and they'll fix them and they'll correct them. And meanwhile, I'm looking at bigger picture stuff, and I'm helping pull them in the bigger picture direction. They're helping me pull me in on some of the details. So having different people that have those different strengths that can augment you, that's been really, really huge. Having people, yeah, I'm trying to think of another great example off the top of my head, but that's one thing that I think we've hired people that have really tried to like balance the team, that everybody brings something new to the table, rather than hiring people that are just like us.
Yeah,
has been very, very beneficial. It allowed us to, you know, be more efficient and get more done.
Right. Absolutely. What's one of your biggest mistakes you guys have made so far, and how did you learn from it?
Let's see. Biggest mistake
or challenge, and how did you learn and grow?
Well, one thing early on was, actually I talked a little bit about like the spring after we launched, and sales were kind of going down, and you know, sales weren't looking great. And we're like, how are we going to turn this around? And, so we had to really look at how we were currently selling Astropad. This was Astropad at the time. This was before Lunar Display. We had to look at how we were selling Astropad and what wasn't working about it. And I think from that, we really learned to understand what our customer was at that time. Like, I think we were pricing and selling our product for a customer we weren't ready for yet. So what I mean by that is we were pitching this as a professional class drawing solution, you know, you could use with the Mac. And we just weren't ready for professionals to work on it. I mean, it was more at that point a hobbyist tool. We had aspirations. We were selling it. We were pushing it as this professional tool. It just wasn't there yet. The styluses weren't good enough. Our software wasn't good enough. And so we had this higher software price with a free trial, really geared at what you'd expect to see in professional software. But we had to realize in order to turn things around that at the time, most of the people buying it were more like hobbyists. And that, so we, what we did is we had to switch things around and we started selling it through the App Store and we dropped the price dramatically. I think it was like 3 times cheaper, you know, dropped from like 60 to 20, I think, and started selling it through the Apple's App Store. And that meant we couldn't offer a trial. It was just, you had to buy it up front. But that opened it up to a new group of customers, more of that hobbyist crowd that started to propel us and really drove those sales up, really started to, it started to grow again. And that was really key, just like realizing there's where you want the business to be and there's where you're at today. And realizing sometimes the difference between those two. And in fact, we were patient and eventually we released something we call AstroPad Studio. And that's a professional edition of the product. It's actually a subscription based that has a bunch more features. It's actually the professional edition of the product. And that we weren't ready for that yet. That came later. And now it's doing really, really well. And in fact, the AstroPad Studio version is the majority of our AstroPad revenue. But that required our software to get better. That required Apple to introduce their own stylus, the Apple Pencil. That was really, really good. So it required these pieces for us to be patient and for us to get there before we could really price it like that. And so that was a major, major challenge for us in the beginning because it was like, are we going to be able to keep doing this? Are we going to be able to be, or are we going to have to go fall back to, you know, some other kind of job? And that's when we started these experiments and really started to talk to customers, started to understand why are people leaving? Why are people going into the trial and they're not converting to paid customers? That was a huge, huge lesson for us.
Well, and it's got to be at times very like, did we just do all this work and create something that's not going to be used? And
yeah,
you know, but you guys continue to push on and you know, persevere and you were patient too. So
yeah, and that's the thing too, I guess, like overarching too, is like just not giving up. It's just keep plowing, keep going at it.
Yeah.
Cause so much of this too is just timing as well, like timing in the market. And the longer you're at it, I mean, that's the more opportunity for you to hit the right time.
Sure.
Because when we did this, for example, to give you an idea, like AstroPad Studio, the professional version, for that to really take off, we needed Apple's Pencil. That is super accurate, has really great pressure. And so it has the level of precision that like a professional artist needs. And when we started AstroPad, that didn't exist. I mean, we started AstroPad 2 years prior to this stylus existing. And if we had just gone after AstroPad for a couple months, be like, this isn't working, we're done, it wouldn't have taken off. But instead we kept at it. We kept, you know, we kind of pivoted the customer we were targeted. We figured out ways to make it work so that eventually it happened that Apple introduced the stylus. We didn't know anything about it. We were just like, oh my God, this is amazing. They introduced it. But we were ready because we had never given up. We had we had kept at it. And we were in the perfect position then to capitalize new hardware that Apple had just introduced.
Well, yeah. And anybody else who wanted to do what you guys are doing was way far behind. You guys
it was there. At least 2 years behind at that point.
Yeah. Perfect. What are three key factors to your company's success or to your success personally?
Yeah, three key factors. So, you know, one thing that's been really unique to us is our technology stack. We call it Liquid. It's what powers Astropad and actually Luna Display as well. And it's this custom streaming stack we've built for screen, really like screen sharing is how you can think of it. And it's really unique to us. And we've been able to be really successful with that because it's not something you can easily copy. At this point, we have years of research and development into it. And we were uniquely positioned also to be able to build that because my co-founder and I had the experience of working at places like Apple, where we had learned some of the fundamentals that was key to building a technology stack like this. So that was really, really unique to us. It's just having those, finding a problem area that we had unique skills that we could apply. So for example, I worked on some video tech at Apple. My co-founder Giovanni Donnelli worked on some networking technology at Apple. We were able to combine those together to produce Liquid. So that's been really, really unique to us. And it's even the reason now why it would be really hard for somebody to copy our Luna display. Not impossible, but difficult because of that unique expertise we brought to it. So that's been something really, really unique about us. Another thing actually, you know, I do want to highlight, and I just was talking about as well, is timing. Being in the right place at the right time for a lot of this.
Yeah.
Being there for when the iPad Pro comes out, the Apple Pencil, and having 2 years of research and development that was really, really well positioned for this. So that's been really, really key for us as well. The other thing that's been super important to our success is, and this goes to something typical of like engineers, and you know, I'm sure others as well, but in terms of this, I know this happened a lot with engineers, where they focus totally on building the technology, building the product, and they leave marketing as an afterthought. And for us, marketing has always been equally as important as engineering and product development. It is just as important.
Yeah.
And we think about that from the very beginning. And that's something, too, I think that we even we got a bit in our company DNA as well as having been at Apple and seeing how they do it, how they approach marketing, how they build that in to when they're engineering products. It's just something we knew we had to think about, and that has directed how we improve the product, how we originally built it, how we market it, everything. You know, we really think very, very carefully about how we communicate what the product is to the right customer. I always think of for a lot of other entrepreneurs that build something really great, they just leave marketing to an afterthought. It's like a tree falling in the forest with nobody around. It's like, does anybody hear it? You know, because you can build the greatest thing in the world, but if nobody knows about it, what does it matter? You know, I'm sure it was fun to build it, but does it, you know, is anybody else getting any benefit out of it? So, you know, taking that very, very seriously from the beginning has been key. And that kind of split between me, I was more on the marketing side, and my co-founder, well, we both did engineering in the beginning, but then once we got closer to launch, then it kind of split. And my co-founder focused on finishing up the product, and I was 100% marketing just all the time.
Yeah, some good stuff there. I want to hit on the timing too, because that plays so important in my market. You know, I'm in real estate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
had I started real estate investing in 2005, you know, I would likely still be a teacher and probably trying to figure out how to pay back my bills. Yet I started in 2008 when the market had just crashed and it was perfect timing. Now everybody was telling me I was crazy and I was stupid and I shouldn't be investing. But it was just perfect. It was absolutely perfect timing. And that goes with what you just said. And that goes with so many different industries, so many, it is about timing, but it's also not only about timing, but it's taking action when the timing is right.
Absolutely.
And that's what you guys were able to do. I mean, maybe you were just a little bit ahead of time because that the pencil. Pencil?
Yeah, Apple Pencil.
Apple Pencil. Yeah. Sorry, it wasn't around. But at the same time, you took that action. And by the time it came around, you were already ready and ready to go.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's interesting too to compare what you do with the housing crisis in 2008. Because also with us, when we were doing Astropad, there was like this gold rush in like apps, especially when the iPhone came out and the App Store opened. There was like this gold rush and just people making huge sums of money overnight. And everybody flooded in. And then all of a sudden, it seemed like there was no, you know, it was only the big players making money in the app space at that point, like the Candy Crush, you know, the major, major studios. And so for a small company to come in and also try to make money off of software and like the app space was also nuts. Like you're saying, people are telling you in 2008, like, this is nuts. Don't do this. It was the same thing. It was like, well, nobody's making money in that space anymore. Don't do that. Don't, you know, look here instead. It was like, no. We really think there's some like value here. We really think we should go after it, you know? I've heard people describe that before as like serendipity, you know, it's being in the right place at the right time, but then taking action, knowing when to take action.
Yeah.
When the opportunity strikes.
And knowing when to ignore the voices.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So it's not always wise to listen to the masses.
Right.
Usually not wise, actually.
Not wise, because where everybody else is, it's like that's, you know, it's reaching peak. Everybody's like, oh, go do this. And it's like, well, it's really popular. It's probably, you know, potentially peaking.
So, Matt, what's a favorite, you know, business book, something that you either read, you know, or reading right now or recently, something that you like?
Yeah, I'll go back to my favorite and key with the marketing thing. When we had our marketing person join, I had her read this as well. It's an old one. It's from like 1993, I think, but it's 22 Immutable Laws of Marketing. And it's just fantastic about kind of some of the high level basic stuff in marketing, how to think about marketing and branding. And it's from 1993, but this is like age old advice. I'm sure you could probably go back, find a book, similar book from like 1920 or something, you know, this stuff hasn't changed.
Yeah.
So that's what I really, really love about it. Talking a lot about, you know, first mover advantage, and how, like, if you can't have first mover advantage, you need to put yourself you need to create a new category for yourself where you are the first, you know, about the importance of having a differentiated, unique offering. You know, tons of really great stuff in that book, 22 Immutable Laws of Marketing.
Cool. Last question for you before we wrap up. What's your definition to obtaining financial freedom? Or
this definition of financial freedom?
What is it for you?
For me, it would be able to pursue my interests. You know, let's say it's a second company. Let's say we sold this company and pursue a second company without having to worry about day to day. You know, how am I going to pay the mortgage? How am I going to having that the finances to just be able to pursue the idea of like a new company without having to worry about day-to-day payments, I suppose.
Cool. Well, last thing is, if people want to get a hold of you, get a hold of your product, we'll put some show notes in there, but how do they reach you?
Yeah, so you can reach me at matt@astro-hq.com. That's my email at AstroHQ. And if you're interested in one of our products, AstroPad or Lunar Display, head over to one of our websites, like AstroPad, which is spelled A-S-T-R-O-P-A-D, just like it sounds, AstroPad.com, and also LunaDisplay.com. So once again, just L-U-N-A-Display.com. AstroPad, you can grab a trial today. It's available if you have an iPad. We've got a free trial via our website. And if you're interested in Lunar Display, we're still working on shipping those to our Kickstarter backers, but you can still sign up for pre-order if that's something you're really interested at, lunadisplay.com.
Cool. Well, Matt, I appreciate you being on the show and sharing about your company and lessons learned. And I think it's just awesome when I heard you talking about the Kickstarter and doing that. And that's an impressive feat that you guys completed at getting, you know, well, $750,000 pre-order done. So congratulations on that. Appreciate you being a part of the show.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me on. It's been fun.
Hey, special thanks to Matt for joining us on the show. Appreciate him taking time out of his day and the value he added. So a couple things I took from this this episode. First of all, understand your customer and understand who you're serving, know where the business is today and where it's going with that. Next thing is find a problem area that you can solve. If you can find a problem area and a more specific you can be, the better. So you've always heard find a niche, find a problem area that you can solve. And then last thing is he said market from the start. Do marketing right from the start. Don't wait. Do that right away, right from the start, and get going on it. So again, special thanks to Matt. Appreciate him coming on the show. You can reach him at matt@astrohq.com. And check out our Facebook page. Go on there. You know, give us a you can review on the Facebook page. But you can also make comments. You know, let us know what you like, what you don't like. Let us know what you want to know. What do you want us to talk about? Maybe we have to do some digging and research or find the right guest, but do you want to know about a certain topic? Do you want us to cover something? Or do you have a specific question? Maybe that's just a short answer. We can respond back on Facebook. And then if you haven't already, go on to iTunes, give us a rating review. We'd love to hear what you think about the show. So give us a rating review and then share this out. Share it out with people you think it's going to add value to. Share it on your Facebook page, your LinkedIn, whatever social media you're on, and let other people know about our show. That's about it. So thanks for joining me. I am Todd Dexter, signing off. Make every day Saturday.
Are you ready to start investing in real estate today but don't know where to start? Sometimes investing can seem way too complicated, but it actually couldn't be any easier than with homeinvest.com. You know the co-founder and my friend Nate Armstrong. He appeared on episode 20, and if you haven't heard it, go back and listen to it, episode number 20. Home Invest is a company that allows you to invest in turnkey real estate. Their goal is to build powerful investment tools that make real estate investing accessible to everyone. They have contractors and property managers available for you with the click of your mouse. While other real estate agents can only offer a property, Home Invest brings you a full turnkey package that allows you to diversify your investments, earn passive income, and start building equity in properties. Their simple, intuitive design allows newcomers and experienced investors alike to hit the ground running and to be able to choose the properties when they want and where they want. View easy-to-understand charts and data to allow you to buy in only a few clicks or just a simple phone call. With Home Invest, you'll be building your portfolio as quickly or as slowly as you would like. And right now, Home Invest is giving our listeners, Pillar of Wealth Creation listeners, a free course on how to finally win in real estate investing. So go to homeinvest.com/pillars. That's homeinvest.com/pillars to claim your free course today.